Well, it is. I mean, it is. It's a very competitive environment, and you're right. The audience has splintered to the point there are so many choices, so many options. When you mention young people, people in their 20s, who most of whom no longer pick up a morning paper, most of whom don't regularly watch television newscast, and when you say they get the information on your phone, what scares me the most about that is there have been survey after survey after survey indicates that those kinds of news, and I put news in quotes here, consumers, don't really look for news. They think if it's important enough, it will find them. Because they tweet, so they're looking at Twitter. Because they Facebook, they're looking at Facebook. Because they Instagram, because they Pinterest, because they have a homepage they look at. They just make the presumption that if it's important enough, it will find me. That's a scary part of the process for me, because I think you need to make some effort to find out more about things that you see. You see a headline. I think you need to make a little effort to find out where the headline come from. What's the story behind the headline? Are there other versions of that story that I need to know about? That's the way I'd like to see it work. My fear is it doesn't work that way, and surveys seem to indicate time after time that it doesn't work that way, that especially young people now presume if it's important enough, it'll find me. I'm concerned that that's in many ways breeding a less than fully informed citizenry.
My guest today, Ron Majors, from WLS-TV in Chicago, formerly of KSDP-TV. Just this conversation we've had, and one thought I talked about before, and I want to ask your opinion on this, is in 1974, Watergate took months to uncover and to bring to the public. Right now, we have politicians right now who have very openly done things which are corrupt or could be immoral, illegal, and the news cycle is so much faster now, and the way that we, again, we've talked about before, are tweeting or images are popping in and out. Do you find now that it's going to be tougher for politicians or tougher for people in power to be able to do things corrupt or even say something that might be off, you know, inappropriate one time without their careers being ruined? Do you think that we're going to be holding politicians more accountable now?
Well, I think the inappropriate comments are always going to float to the top because they're quick, they're easy, it's easy to take the sound bite and it gets repeated 100 times and everybody sees it. There is, for example, there's a controversy going on right now within the Republican Party that's pretty indicative of the issues facing the Republican Party. There is a congressman named King from Iowa who made a comment about legalizing undocumented people in America, referring to the Dream Act. And the example of the Dream Act is kind of always an undocumented young person who's a valedictorian of a high school class who was brought here at the age of 3 by parents who were undocumented, so was never able to become a full citizen of the United States. Here you have this outstanding young person. How do we find a way to legalize them? Well, Representative King said that for every one of those valedictorians, there are 100 young people who weigh 100 pounds and have calves the size of cantaloupes because they've been drug mules. The Speaker of the House, John Boehner, immediately disavowed that comment and said there's no room for that in the Republican Party. Congressman King, being confronted now by the House Speaker of his own party, stood up to him and said, I'm statistically correct. For every valedictorian, there may be 100 drug mules. I mean, he's now going to have a fight with his House Speaker about his remarks. And it's the very conservative wing of the Republican Party, battling with the center of the Republican Party, if you will, in the person of John Boehner. John Boehner reacted by today calling out Congressman King and saying it was an ignorant remark. Now, what's interesting is all of those little quotes that I've mentioned are going to get repeated over and over again. But I don't know if anybody has gone back and looked at the full context of the remarks that Congressman King made. Have they looked at the full text? Has the media looked at the full text? Has Congressman Boehner looked at the full text? I have. I've gone back and looked at the full text, and I'm comfortable that I know exactly what he was trying to say and how he said it. But
do you think he's being misunderstood?
Are his remarks simply insensitive, or are they statistically correct, would be the argument. And as long as the remarks themselves are so inflammatory, all we're going to kind of hear are the remarks.
Well, remarks is what sells a product, and it's what the opponent will use in their commercial.
Absolutely,
this fall, and I guess kind of what I was getting at, partly is politicians are human beings too. People in business are human beings too. And if you look at what with Paula Deen, this last summer. Some remarks that were made are inappropriately in her career it's on ice right now. We have a mayoral candidate in New York who has done some things I think some people might find morally repulsive, but is continuing on. Are we going to be at a point where we're only going to be able to elect very bland people into office, or only be able to have very bland CEOs because they're not going to have any background of any kind of sound bites or any Googleable actions or things they've said, that we're going to have, really some people that are not going to be able to be very effective because they don't have a lot of charisma or a lot of things, because when you have a lot of fire in the belly, you're going to say some things that maybe you regret.
Yeah, I don't think there's any great concern about that. I think in the two examples you cite, there were things in the background that made those remarks even bigger. In the case of Congressman Weiner, he had reached the point where he said, everything is out there. I've told you everything I need to know that you need to know. And then it turns out, no, there were more things that he hadn't told us. In the case of Paula Deen, there was a lawsuit in the background by some of her employees saying that this kind of behavior had gone on for a long time. It's not just the remark that was made. We're talking about a pattern of behavior. So I don't think there's any concern about... There's always been a concern about will good people run for office because their life will go under such scrutiny. That argument has gone on for 50 years that I know of that I've been in this business. So it's not a new phenomenon, and it's not just as a result of the soundbite era. It goes way back to years and years ago when why would someone want to put their own life under that kind of microscope? I would always hope that we would have people who would be willing to do public service and would think that their ideas are the kind that they need to bring them up in the public marketplace.
Do you think the scrutiny is harder now, though, than even a few years ago? Because now everything's on tape now. I mean, no matter where you are or where you if you're talking to someone or you're making a speech, everything's on not video, but everything's recorded now. Digitally.
I would make the argument we're better off that way. And the example I would give you is in Illinois, we have the urban area of Chicago, and Chicago and the collar counties, and in Illinois. We call everything else, in Chicago that is, we call everything else downstate. Mm-hmm. Whether it's north of us, south of us, or west of us, doesn't matter. That's downstate. The rural areas are downstate. And people forget that while we've got this great urban center in Chicago, when you get to the south of Illinois, you are in the south of America.
Right.
You're in the southern United States by the time you get to the tip of Illinois. And for many, many years, we've had politicians who would give one speech in Chicago and a completely different speech in southern Illinois. Well, because everybody's got cameras now, they can't do that anymore. They're held accountable for everything they say. And in the end, I think that's pretty good for the process.
To a lesser extent, in Minneapolis-St. Paul, we have the same, we have it's outstate or it's metro area. We have Minneapolis-St.
Sure.
Paul, and that's where a lot of the money and a lot of the power gets driven from, and there's outstate. But it'd be... Rochester or even up Alexandria, Brainerd. But that is good. I do agree with you, though. I think that we are going to be holding people more accountable. You know, like I said, my only concern is: if everything we say is going to be on a constant, you know, recorded device, it's going to be tough to have to explain everything you said in your life. But maybe that's for the better.
I think in the end, it probably is for the better. I think particularly for those people in public life, whether they're corporate chieftains who are supposed to be setting an example for the whole company, or whether they're politicians, I think we're probably better off if we're held accountable for what we really do say and what we really do mean. The thing you may be getting at is, should you be held accountable for a slip of the tongue? You know, maybe not, but that should be obvious.
Mm-hmm.
If it was truly just a slip of the tongue, or whether it was really an exposure of what you hold in your heart.
Very true. Our guest today, Ron Majors, will be back in 2 minutes on KLEB Flashback Twin Cities. Flashback Twin Cities on Club 1220 KLEB, talking to Ron Majors. Let's lighten the mood a little bit. I want to play, let's take it to the year 1979. Let's play some audio.
They have precipitation 60% later tonight and tomorrow, 30% for tomorrow night. Here it comes.
Well, you gave me a perfect idea of what to get you all for Christmas. I'm going to get you that little face mask for all three of you. I think that'd be great.
Great. That would be really nice. I'd like that.
No, I thought so.
And Bob's already got one. That's right. Used it. That was when you broke your face on the snowmobile, wasn't it? In sports, the Olympic hockey.
Did you miss the days of discussing snowmobile races on the news desk?
Yeah, there are. You know, there are some things about Minnesota that people don't understand unless you've live there. You know, it's hard to explain to people outside Minnesota that, for instance, in the winter, that on Lake Mille Lacs, a whole new town grows up on the ice, complete with pizza delivery and mail delivery in the ice shacks. You know, those kind of things are fun. I also, there was Governor Rudy Perpich, when he was elected, he actually had a polka mass as part of his official inauguration ceremony. When I very first moved to Minnesota in 1974, I knew I had some things to learn when I was watching it was Mel Jazz. Mel Jazz used
right.
to do
sure.
used to be on the air, and I'm sure you got some stuff of him on the internet.
We do.
And Mel Jazz had an ad in his morning show. For you'll see these ads for certain kinds of hits, record hits, hits of the 50s, hits of the 60s, gospel hits, love songs. This one I'll never forget was 25 Golden Ukrainian Favorites.
Of course.
And I realized at that moment there might be some things I need to learn about Minnesota.
I mean, was there a point when you got here and you thought, okay, now it's 20 degrees is warm and 25 golden Ukrainian hits. You thought, what have I done? Well, I moved away from San Francisco and now I'm going to be going to a polka mass.
Yeah, you're right. There, I did have some second thoughts on occasion, but what you learn is the texture of communities in the Twin Cities and in Minnesota is endlessly interesting. And the other thing I absolutely loved in those years, and I can only hope it is still true, is that Minnesotans generally would not put up with corruption in politics. The first example of that was there was a council member in Minneapolis who, not long after I got there, was voted out of office. And the controversy was he had accepted a $200 campaign contribution from a bar, restaurant owner who had a liquor license pending in his ward. And that was just too much for some people. That if you're going to eventually make a decision on that guy's liquor license, you shouldn't be taking money from him as a campaign contribution. That was a legitimate campaign controversy, and I loved it. I loved that people would even think of it, that, you know, just the appearance of impropriety is enough.
No, it is true. In fact, when I lived in Chicago for 3 years, one of those, and I love Chicago, by the way, and I love living there, one of the surprises I had was when I came there was there's a lot of tolerance of politicians of what they're able to do and not do. And I was trying to explain to people that I became friendly with, in Minnesota, There's a politician, there's a mayor here in Minneapolis that had put out a newsletter. Well, the newsletter turned out to be more of a campaign ad for himself, and ultimately ended up paying back the city, I think it was $10,000. It's, you know, small peanuts in the world of politics and corruption, but Minnesotans, Minneapolis, people in Minneapolis, St. Paul, they just don't tolerate that.
No, and I'm fascinated by that, and I hope it is forever so. You're right. In Chicago, we have developed a tolerance that is far too great for corruption. I think part of it is, honestly, that a certain percentage of us have just kind of given up. That, well, that's the way it always was. It looks like that's the way it will always be. Very rarely down here do you see a real backlash to examples of public corruption. I mean, it truly is sad. I think we put up with way too much in Chicago.
The one thing that surprised me when I first moved there was the mayor's name was everywhere. I thought, this is a great campaign idea. You can put your name everywhere, and you never have to spend a dime on actual campaign materials.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and as soon as a new mayor was elected, the old mayor's name comes off, and they spend a lot of money putting the new mayor's name up. When you land at O'Hare, as you're leaving O'Hare, the first thing you see is a great Welcome to Chicago sign from the mayor.
Right, right. And at the cost of the taxpayers. Taxpayers can pay for your campaign.
Yeah.
I want to play a clip for you, and I want to talk a little bit about this. This is from 1979 also, and this was in the height of ABC's Charlie's Angels era. And I want to see if you remember this clip.
Bronco cheerleader.
I want to assure you that this is a local news cutting. We have nothing whatsoever to do with the Playboy roller disco pajama party. There is more trouble in Iran. The crisis continues there. We have a story of a Thanksgiving reunion. Two boys in Afton, two small Vietnamese boys, have finally been reunited with their mother, father, brothers and sisters, and an aunt and uncle after 4 years of separation. We'll have that story and more for you. Those of you who've turned off your television sets in disgust, wait about another half hour. We'll be back with the news.
There's some. I'm not sure you could get away with that today.
Well, I didn't get away with it then.
Uh oh.
What happened was there really was. Imagine this: some network executive, somebody comes to him and says, "Hey, I got a good idea. Why don't we do a show called the Playboy Roller Disco Pajama Party, and we can have girls bouncing around in baby doll pajamas on roller skates, and they can do the disco too, and who wouldn't watch that? I mean, I didn't know that show was on, but when I sat down to do the news brief in the middle of that show, I'm looking at the show going, how in the world could this get on the network? I mean, it was just such a crass decision. Trying to play the lowest common denominator of everything they could find, I was just stunned by it. And being stunned, suddenly the red light goes on and I'm on, and that's what I said. Well, there was a bit of a backlash. I mean, my bosses at the time weren't too happy that I had said that, but it was what was on my mind and what I said. Now, when you say you don't know if I could get away with it today, you have to remember that since I've been in Chicago, I walked out on a job, a good job at NBC, because I had a general manager who actually wanted to put Jerry Springer on our newscast as a social commentator.
Right, we were discussing that. Yep.
Jerry Springer was taping his show in the NBC building where I worked in Chicago, and we had a general manager with a brain cramp who actually wanted to put Jerry Springer on the newscast as a social commentator, and my co-anchor and I both quit. So it wasn't just that moment. When the moment calls for it, I think over the course of my career, I have stood up for those things that I think are right, and I have spoken my mind, and sometimes I've gotten in trouble for it, but I think it's more important for me to stay the person I am than the person somebody else wants me to be.
No, we're watching a clip of this video, and this is actually someone sent me this video. It's really, I mean, to be able to see one of these moments on video is pretty fascinating, because you don't see a lot of that in TV. Calling out your own network or your own bosses on what the programming is. We were just looking at this and thought, how could you even sit down and try to write a serious news copy when you're watching this, and then 5 minutes later you're supposed to watch a serious news show within, you know, 10 minutes later.
It was crazy, and the whole thing was crazy.
And on the same point, Jerry Springer in 1997, I think, was the year that we were talking about that before, also before he came on the air, when he was going to be the social commentary. I mean, that was the height of his program's, I guess, you know, de-evolution of TV talk shows. I mean, I've never watched it. I've seen clips of it, as I'm sure you probably have in the past, very brief moments of it. How would one even think to marry those two of putting something that has exposed some of the worst parts of society into what at the time was the number one news program in Chicago, which I don't think needed a lot of help?
No, it was a crazy moment by the guy who was general manager, and his argument was, the general manager's argument was, forget Jerry Springer's show and how bad you think the show is. Jerry Springer was a guy who had held public office. He had served on the city council in Cincinnati. His political career came to kind of a strange end when a hooker who was arrested ended up having a check from Jerry Springer in her pocketbook. So that little controversy kind of cost him his political career. But nevertheless, this general manager was arguing that this was a guy who, at one time, he was in the television business. He was a newscaster. He was a city councilman. So he has a background where he could offer social commentary. And I said, no, he gave all that up when he decided to do this trashy TV show.
Right, right.
What he's now known for is the trashy TV show. As soon as his face goes on the air, all anybody knows is, trashy TV show, why is he sitting on the news set? So if you want him to sit on the news set, you can't get me to sit on the news set.
Right. I mean, all that goes away when your brand image is chairs being tossed around a stage and lots of screaming and yelling. The viewer's not going to separate that, and your brand image is not going to separate that.
No. It's very difficult to... You work so hard to gain the trust of the audience. Why would you throw it away in a moment like that? And actually, that ended up being the argument that helped me get out of my contract at NBC. I finally went to them and said, you're putting him on the air, and by in doing so, you so severely damage my image that I won't be able to continue to do the job you hired me for. And I'm going to sue you to protect my own image. And once they realized that I was digging my heels in and I really was going to sue NBC over the damage to my image as a result of this decision, they finally were willing to release me from my contract. And I took a few months off and then went across the street. And I've been here at ABC in Chicago for the last 16 years, 32 years total in Chicago now.
32 years, and does it seem like yesterday you took that trip from San Francisco to Minneapolis?
It does. It kind of does. It really does. That was my first time off the West Coast, and I haven't made it back. I've been a Midwesterner ever since.
Well, you know, in Minneapolis, St. Paul, I think some people might confuse you and Paul because they say, Ron Majors, he was here until a few years ago. That was Paul Majors, but you might remember Ron Majors was here at Channel 5, and then, again, Paul at Channel 11. When you're here and you're part of our homes every night, you are family. And so on Facebook and Twitter, when I said who our guests would be today, we had a lot of likes, so and a lot of people wanted to comment and wish you well. Those that don't see you on TV every night anymore, but it's great to have you on the airwaves here in Minneapolis, St. Paul again. Hopefully, we'll be able to do it again sometime.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
And keep watching tcmedianow.com if you want to see yourself, Ron, from 35 years ago.
I get a kick out of it. Yeah. Thank you for posting it.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you for being here. Ron Majors, live from Chicago of WLS-TV and formerly of KSTP-TV. Next week, join us for some artists from the song Clouds. That is the Zach Zobiak song. And this was the number one song on iTunes. They'll be performing live in studio and talking about how that track was recorded. Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB Club 1220.